Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, August 21st, 2017. Back on August 21st, 2012, Donald Trump tweeted, "Why are we continuing to train these Afghanis who then shoot our soldiers in the back? Afghanistan is a complete waste. Time to come home!" Tonight, Donald Trump is set to deliver the U.S. strategy regarding Afghanistan. As the White House was issuing a statement on the dismissal of Breitbart's white nationalist Steve Bannon, Trump was meeting on Friday at Camp David with national security advisors. The question is whether Trump will send thousands more U.S. troops into Afghanistan or withdraw from the 16-year occupation. Signs are pointing, though, towards continuing the U.S. commitment over there. Trump is scheduled for a 9 p.m. address to the nation. The Associated Press is reporting that in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson's comments suggest the Pentagon may have won its argument that the U.S. military must remain engaged in order to ensure terrorists aren't again able to threaten the U.S. from havens inside of Afghanistan. Nicholson spoke before the announcement about Trump's speech. He said the commandos and a plan to double the size of the Afghan special operations forces are critical to winning the war. "I assure you we are with you in this fight," he said. "We are with you and we will stay with you." Nicholson said this during a ceremony at Camp Moorhead, a training base for Afghan commandos southeast of Kabul. Trump will ask Americans tonight to trust him on his new Afghanistan strategy. But a new Marist NBC poll doesn't show trust in Trump. It found that in states he won, which helped him secure the nomination, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, 6 in 10 voters believe the U.S.'s role on the world stage has been weakened under Trump. And it found that most voters are embarrassed by his conduct. Turning to Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback whose national anthem protest against police brutality is why current and former NYPD officers gathered in Brooklyn over the weekend. Kaepernick has become a symbol of the clash of celebrity, sport, and social issues as more people invoke his name to debate thorny issues of patriotism and race. Here in New York, law enforcement officials from all five boroughs gathered in Brooklyn to show support for Kaepernick and his silent protest against systemic injustice in cases of police brutality.
What Colin Kaepernick did is try to bring awareness to an issue that this nation unfortunately has ignored for far too long, and that's the issue of racism in America and policing in America.
Sergeant Edwin Raymond.
I'm sorry, just emotions, man. Because we shouldn't even have to be here doing this, you know? When you see what's transpiring right now in Charlottesville and throughout the nation, that's the bigger version of what Colin Kaepernick is trying to fight against. You know, when you take that type of bigotry and the residue of bigotry, which is bias, and you couple it with policing, every so often, everything aligns itself and someone pays with their life, their lives. You know, so we're here today to support Colin Kaepernick and to let people know that if you want to say he's anti-cop, what do you have to say about all these cops standing here in support of his message?
The gathering over the weekend in Brooklyn Bridge Park was organized by Sergeant Edwin Raymond. 80 officers wearing black T-shirts emblazoned with hashtag I'm with Cap attended the rally. New York City Council member Jamani Williams with the 45th District in Brooklyn says no one should be shocked by what transpired in Charlottesville.
It shouldn't be a surprise. That type of stuff is in the DNA of this country, and it has happened time and time again. And most people who've been feeling the brunt of oppression have been feeling it even before Charlottesville and before Trump. So we have to make sure that's clear. What has changed now, we haven't had a sitting president just take away the coded language that conservatives have been using in a way that Trump has for a very, very long time and help incite this. The most hate mail I've ever gotten was when I sat for the Pledge of Allegiance in the city council chambers. I sat quietly did not disrupt anything, did not disrupt the proceedings. I say that because people have a tendency to pretend that this is somehow about patriotism. This is about, and what Kaepernick is doing, is simply about pushing back on a structure of oppression and supremacy. That's all it's about, and I want folks to understand the connections between the venom that's being tossed Kaepernick's way and the Nazis and white supremacists that we saw in Charlottesville. They are deeply connected. And in order for that supremacy, that bigotry to be sustained, oftentimes people push patriotism as the line to try to cover these things. And so we shouldn't be surprised that the people who most push hard on you have to be ultra patriotic to the point of fascism, to the point of Nazism, are the same people who have the tiki torches in Charlottesville. There's a reason that the young man, I forgot his name, who was in that Vice interview leading the charge, ran for Congress as a Republican conservative, not as a liberal. Because we've been saying for such a long time that conservatism and the policies they support are tantamount to bigotry, to racism, to the ultra-patriotic fascism and Nazism. We've been saying that for a long time. And the world is being taken over, and you still have people not admitting it. There are rapists in the NFL. There are people who have murdered in the NFL. There are people who have abused animals who got contracts in the NFL. Then you have Colin Kaepernick, who's done none of that. All he did was kneel during the national anthem. Probably in an act that is the most patriotic that many of us has seen in a very, very long time. Patriotism has been pushing back on the supremacy, oppression, and structure that this country has been built on. We are not going to allow people to misuse the word patriot. And I just want to be very clear, because many people will say, you are against law enforcement. You are against the country. All of these people here are from law enforcement. So what say you now? We have to tear down and be honest about this discussion.
Williams says how hard it is to push back on a structure, but standing with law enforcement officers in Brooklyn, the council member says we're going to push back and try to hold America to her ideals, even when she doesn't. NYPD Sergeant Raymond says the issues of policing in America are a microcosm of racism in America.
The people that marched in Charlottesville, make no mistake that they hold positions in the criminal justice system or some other entity in this society where their ideology becomes tangible and there's a human cost to it, you know.
Edwin Raymond is a close friend.
Retired New York City Detective Graham Weatherspoon.
We have been working against some of the ills here in New York City and the nation for many years. The matter of concern with regard to Colin Kaepernick only shows the racist agenda of the NFL. Matter of fact, the NFL donated over $8 million to the campaign of the present president of the United States. Conversely, they gave $800,000 to the Democratic Party, over $8 million to the Republican Party. Where people put their money tells you where their heart is. So the owners of the NFL teams, they're not about the people. They're about making money and keeping this agenda first and foremost, the agenda of making money and controlling people. People overall are too caught up in social media, in entertainment, and anything that will distract them from the true realities of life. If we fail to understand the systems and how they operate and how they affect us and impact on our lives, we'll continue to be going in circles in this rat race. All of these systems need to be analyzed, as I analyze the NFL as a plantation system, a trading block of slaves. That's what this is. It's developed from the old plantation method. So it's incumbent upon us to sit down, analyze, think, critique, and then attack the issue. The sins of America, slavery, they haven't addressed them, and they won't address them. There are people that are here, they think this is their country, it's their heritage. There were people here before the Europeans arrived here. The Europeans came, murdered, slaughtered, and took every inch of space from this harbor to the Pacific Ocean. That is the truth. And until this country admits to its sins, the sins are going to continue to fester and come up generation after generation.
Weatherspoon, who is a member of the Amadou Diallo Foundation, says the problem is that racism has a negative effect on both blacks and whites.
It causes people to believe that they're better than others, and then there are people of color who feel that they're less than. And that is seen in a lot of the black offices because they're afraid to come forward. You saw a group of officers here who are not afraid, but the masses of them are afraid to come forward. So this is one thing, dealing with the spirit of fear that rests not only in policing, but across the country. Fear is holding people back, all right? We need police officers that have a true concern for people, all people, to deal with the given situation and resolve the matter if possible. And if you need to or make an arrest, you make the arrest, but you don't unnecessarily beat up people, curse at them, and carry on the way, just as we saw the president talking in Long Island. You don't tell people who have the authority and the power to take a life that they can summarily abuse people. Abuse is criminal in its basic nature. It is criminal. And this has to be removed from the aspect of policing. Up until recent years in London, the police officers didn't even carry guns, because the mindset of the people was different. Can we say we're as developed as the people in Britain? No, we can't. This is a violent nation. It was predicated on violence. It lives on violence. It promotes violence. This has to change. People have to step up and make certain demands of public officials in terms of, this is what we want. We don't want to hear what you're going to do. You're going to do what we tell you to do. And this is what brought about the cessation of the white agenda most recently. People in Virginia came out and said, no, we're not having this. We're not allowing you to walk through here and promote hatred. That is the first step in stopping the ills as we see them in this country. People have to step up, whether they're police officers or plumbers. It makes no difference.
Retired NYPD Deputy Inspector Corey Pagese was commanding officer of the 67th Precinct in East Flatbush.
So as I look through my phone, it says March 3rd, 1931, Congress passed a resolution for us to sing the national anthem, made it officially the song of the United States. And as I scrolled down a little more, I noticed that black people couldn't vote in 1931. So let's just be very, very clear on this United States Constitution and its national anthem. When the Constitution was made, it didn't include us. So we don't. I'm not talking about law enforcement. I'm talking about black people. We don't care about no national anthem. We don't care nothing about no Constitution, because it did not include us. We wasn't included. And as far as unarmed black men being killed, I mean, we could list for days. Tamir Rice, Brown, Graham. I can't name three white unarmed people that was killed. Not three. I could list about 10 or 15 black. Omar Edwards worked for me, God bless the dead. He was a cop for me when I was commanding officer at PSA 9. Young black officer who was just walking to his car and saw somebody trying to break into his car in Harlem. And he started chasing him, which any citizen would do. Fortunately, he was a cop and he had a gun, so he's chasing with his gun. And three on duty, anti-crime cops end up murdering him. And again, you know, the story is, you know, NYPD, all the cops in law enforcement, they get the benefit of the doubt, rightfully so. We was cops. I definitely want cops to get the benefit of the doubt, because you give us that opportunity to take somebody's life. But it has to be when imminent deadly physical force is being used against you or someone else, imminently. That means borrow the gun. I mean, if you can't handle this, then you gotta go to McDonald's. This is a heavy responsibility, because when that bullet go down range, ain't no coming back. It's no coming back. But I was a commander. I was an executive. When I made captain, I was one of 13 black executives in a 40,000-man police department. So I know the inner workings on how this stuff go. They get in the back room, and they come up with stories and analogies. Well, guess what? This thing right here has changed the game.
That's right.
Yes.
This thing right here has changed the game. So no longer can police control the narrative. I mean, you got this idiot called Pat Lynch that actually went on national TV and tried to explain the chokehold of Eric Garner and said it was a jiu-jitsu move. You can't bamboozle me. You put your arm around my neck and squeeze, you're choking me.
That's right. That's right.
So there's still, you got to understand, like these white cops, these white executives, I mean, we here in the Mosaic, New York City, the police department is more minority than anything. But look, let's just look at the power positions. Police commissioner, white. Chief of detectives, white. I said power. I ain't say first deputy commissioner who's black. I said power. Chief of detectives, white. Counterterrorism just got locked up for being drunk on the plane yesterday. White. Okay, so I know where the power is. So don't tell me that it's more minority than anything else, but we're not in power positions. And so these cops are running out here. You got a lot of rogue cops. We got a whole bunch of good cops. We know that. I know some black cops. You don't even want them to come in your house. So we're not saying that every single black cop is good and all white cops
That's
are
right.
bad.
That's right.
We're just saying, I don't care if you send a green cop to my house. All I want them to do is treat us with respect. And that's what we're asking for. And as far as Colin Kaepernick, I mean, he sat down. Lawrence Taylor was a crackhead. They kept giving him passes. Ray Lewis killed somebody. He was exonerated, but he shot and killed somebody. Mike Vick with the dog. Elliot, we just got Elliot now. He beat the hell out of his girlfriend for an entire week. So, like, where are we going with this? This guy, he sat on his knee. All he did was take a knee. And I want to give a big shout out to Howie Long's son, Long, who's actually supporting Chris Long, who's supporting Colin Kaepernick. And he's a white player. And that's what we need. And that's the same that we need in law enforcement. We need the white cops to stand up, you know, to support the black cops. And we need organizations like this fool organization called Noble, who had Jeff Sessions come and be the speaker at their national convention. Like, we can't keep sitting down trying to bring them to the table. They don't want us at the table. We got a major league racist called 45, that's the president of the United States right now. It's all right. I mean, I respect him. He won. We got to deal with that. That's just what it is. But we don't got to bring him to the table. Jeff Sessions, I mean, when Coretta Scott King wrote a letter against you, she played her position as a lovely wife for all her life. She wore one letter. And it was about just Jeff Sessions, how racist he is in Alabama. And they appoint him in Noble, National Organization, Black Law Enforcement Executive, bring him to be their guest speaker. Are you kidding me? But we know that there's a whole bunch of Negroes in law enforcement.
Right.
Just because they're black don't mean that they got the same values as every black person. Because like I said, I could point out a lot of black cops that you don't want to come to your house. I promise you.
Retired NYPD Deputy Inspector Corey Pegues is author of the award-winning book, Once a Cop, The Street, The Law, Two Worlds, One Man. Retired NYPD Detective Frank Serpico says he's not a football fan.
I could never understand, since I was a little kid, why one grown adult with a pigskin in his hand get chased by a whole bunch of other adults all over the damn field, and everybody's applauding like crazy. But that's a good distraction. You know, I am here to support my brothers and sisters, and anyone who stands up, has the courage to stand up against injustice and oppression anywhere in this country and the world. I hear from fellow police officers all over the world. They all have the same complaint. When they want to do the right thing, they get punished. There's nowhere they can go. All right, we're in America now. Focus on America. I'm 81 years old. I got everything I've ever needed in life. The one thing I wanted and never got was justice. And the only way we're gonna... The only way anyone is going to get justice if we have a working system of justice where the judges and the district attorneys are not all feeding from the same trowel as they are in Albany and in my county, Columbia County, where I got paperwork to show the corruption. The FBI hung on me, the senator doesn't answer back. They're all eating out of the same trowel. They're not going to punish their own. They're only looking for their own butts. And that's the problem. Even with the police force, the good officers, and I always said, there's no such thing as a crooked cop. You're either a good cop or you're a crook, period. You're just using that uniform. Now, it's come to my attention that 72% of police officers are in agreement with the victims of police brutality. Their problem is that those that are committing the brutality are not brought to justice.
Right.
Now, they're not brought to justice because the people that they are serving don't bring them to justice. When you want to make money, big money, you need criminality. They're not satisfied with the average person like most of us here are who have to sweat and toil just to pay the rent and put food on the table. They want the big bucks. Like they said, across the road there in Wall Street, we all know what happened with the banking system and all. A big fan of mine growing up was Thomas Paine. He was a pamphleteer and he came here and he organized the colonies against the British. And he said, I am a member of the universe and my religion is doing good. And that's what I believe. Thank you very much.
Retired NYPD Detective Frank Serpico, known for whistleblowing on police corruption in the late 60s and early 70s. And finally, the world lost two comedians over the weekend, Dick Gregory and Jerry Lewis, two comedians at opposite ends of the spectrum, Mike Sargent reports.
Both were known for their comedy and, ironically, for being advocates for causes they believed in. Activist, social critic, writer, entrepreneur, comedian, conspiracy theorist, and occasional actor, Dick Gregory began his career in the 1950s. He was part of a new generation of black comedians that included Nipsey Russell, Bill Cosby, and Godfrey Cambridge. He was one of the first black comedians to gain widespread acclaim performing for white audiences.
Well, is your material, how could I say it, is it Negro-oriented? Is it Negro humor, so to speak?
Well, being that I am a Negro, I made this statement when my office was saying about getting a movie, and the answers was coming in, well, we have to write in a Negro part. And I said, no, just give me the part. When I play it, I will make it Negro. You know, there's no question about this at all. And I think it's the same thing with material. The fact that I'm doing the material, the fact that I've been a Negro all my life, the fact that I see things both colors, white and black, and American, makes this. When I walk out on the stage, all of these are projected in. But when I walk out and I do a topical line, it's just a funny topical line that if anyone in the whole wide world would do this line to an audience that understands the situation of the certain area that I'm talking about, it would get a funny laugh.
Saturday, August 19th, 2017, Dick Gregory died of heart failure at a Washington, D.C. hospital. He was 84. Actor, comedian, singer, film producer, film director, screenwriter, and humanitarian, Jerry Lewis first came to most of the world's attention as half the Martin and Lewis comedy duo with singer Dean Martin. They were among the first acts to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show when it debuted as Toast of the Town and made many appearances on early live television. Their first film, My Friend Irma, was based on the popular radio series of the same name. Throughout the 50s, Martin and Lewis made over a dozen comedies together. They were so so popular at the time, there was even a best-selling comic book series called The Adventures of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. It's interesting to note that their 16 films together were all made within a 7-year period. By 1956, when the duo broke up, they both went on to have successful solo careers. Jerry Lewis went on to star, co-write, direct, and produce many comedy hit films from the late 50s into the 60s, including, of course, The Nutty Professor.
Kelp, how long have you been on the faculty of this university?
Prior to my exposure as a student counselor, USC, 3 years. No, I went to post-grad, naturally. That was 2 years prior. No, there was a botany exposure that I had in one particular school. I had decided pre-med, botany, whatever. I would much prefer the sciences, in other words. I think I should really go back to the time that I graduated college.
How long?!
It's also interesting to note that filmmaker Lewis pioneered the technique of using video cameras to monitor while filming, allowing him to review his performances instantly as he directed himself. His use of video assist enabled him to complete most of his films on time and under budget. Lewis even taught a film directing class at USC, and his students included a young Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Lewis did have ambitions as a serious filmmaker and made and starred in a Nazi drama set in a concentration camp called The Day the Clown Cried in 1972. The film ultimately never got released. In his later years, Lewis continued working and became very well known for the over 40 muscular dystrophy telethons he hosted and raised over $2.5 billion for. Lewis remained popular in France, where he was known as Monsieur Jerry and was even awarded the Legion of Honor, though Lewis himself was humble about it.
To be compared or even mentioned in the same breath with Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton is wrong.
Jerry Lewis, who entertained audiences with his unique brand of zany comedy, died Sunday at the age of 91. Jerry Lewis and Dick Gregory, both men who were known for their ability to make you laugh and their ability to make you think. I'm Mike Sargent for WBAI News.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, August 21st, 2017. The news was produced with Akeem Killick, Mike Sargent, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.